Hi, I'm Bubba Fairman.
Hi, this is Ashton Olt.
This is Brendan Curry.
Hi, guys. This is T.D. Irwin.
Hi, this is Michael Towers.
Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe.
And you're listening to
the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
To the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
To the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
To the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
It's on Inside Lacrosse.
Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast on Inside Lacrosse, featuring Big Ten Network and Inside Lacrosse analyst and my old friend, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, great show ahead today. We're going to give our smoking hot takes on the just-ended Duke-North Carolina game. We'll recap midweek action and, of course, preview the biggest games of the weekend, and there are some great ones on Saturday. Dixie, let's get it! That's the bar, Dix, right there. That Dixie, let's get it with the whip. If you can beat that or do your own version of that, make it your own, send us your hot takes on that. Send it in to us, and we'll incorporate you into the show. My daughter has been working on it.
You definitely came with more energy after Hannah, your 7-year-old daughter, was our guest whip last week. She did a great job, by the way. I think I always listen to the podcast back. Typically, when I go for a walk, I'll listen to it. Because I like to walk for, 5 miles or so, 6 miles. And that typically takes me like the hour and a half that the podcast normally runs. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it. I listened back to her, Dixie, let's get it probably a dozen times. It was great. I know we mentioned it last week on the show, but guest whip, like if you want to do it, you just said, here's the bar. If you think you can do better, I'm sending out an open invitation. An open challenge, if you want to call it, to Ted
challenge.
Moon.
A Ted challenge.
Moon. Ted Moon. Moon. Ted okay. Moon at Dolphins Laxer. If you're out there and listening, you're the one that said, don't go on the D-Fly and Dixie show because it's a jinx. And we don't have a guest this week.
You've been talking guests out of it, Ted Moon. But you know what? Kevin Cassis. No fear in that guy. No fear. He said, there's no such thing as a Dixie D-Fly jinx. I'm going to go on that show. I'm going to crush the interview. And I'm going to win my game this weekend. So have no fear, coaches. No fear.
And but Ted Moon, come on the show.
Gauntlet. It's been laid down. It's been laid down. So, Dixie, the big game tonight, number one versus number two, arch rivals located 15 miles apart. And they got shown up. But not even the biggest news to come out of Chapel Hill today is Roy Williams, the long Hall of Fame head coach of North Carolina Tar Heels, resigns. He retired. And there's a bar in Chapel Hill called He's Not Here. Any of the Carolina fans who are listening, they'll know what I'm talking about. They made a big announcement today that they will start serving liquor this week. It's been a beer place. So the Duke North Carolina game, the third biggest story out of Chapel Hill today. Third biggest story.
So you have Roy Williams' retirement announcement number one.
Yes.
The bar, what's it called again?
He's not here.
He's not here. Is serving booze.
Yeah, that's number two. And then this terrific lacrosse game that we just saw is number three.
Wow. Lacrosse can't get any love down in Tobacco Road.
Roy Williams trying to steal some thunder from this lacrosse game, but it was a fantastic game. Let's go to some instant analysis. We're bringing in Inside Lacrosse editor-in-chief Matt Kinnear is here for his guest analysis tonight. Matt, let's start with you. What did you see?
You know, this game was, I would describe it as pretty. You know, all these ACC Thursday night games have been dramatic and exciting for their own reasons. You know, this one maybe wasn't as, you know, as many fireworks, but I think this one was one where Duke had to gut it out and probably learned a lot more through this win, this experience of, you know, kind of having to react to some new things than some other wins. You know, this was a really gutsy, gritty win for the Blue Devils tonight.
Dixie, quick thoughts on the game.
Yeah, I thought the game took on a couple different personalities throughout the contest. I thought early first half and early third quarter, it resembled an old club game from back in the USCLA days, maybe like a Mount Washington or an MLC versus a Long Island or something like that. It was free flowing. It was up and down. It was physical. And then it just kind of, it got sloppy. You know, I thought the game got really sloppy in the fourth quarter. And I thought the goaltenders were terrific. I mean, the stats I'm looking at, Adler, I think, finished with 17 saves. Krieg was 14, and particularly late. Krieg made some great saves down the stretch. Adler made a big save in regulation. So it was, it was a tale of two games. And in the end, it felt like a CAA game or a Big Ten game. It became that slugfest, kind of that war of attrition, which you don't often see in the sports car style of the ACC. It's typically up and down, up and down, up and down. Yeah, Notre Dame's going to stop you here and there traditionally. But I thought this game, it took on different ebbs and flows for me. But in the end, what a huge goal by Duke. Each team had a chance to win it in overtime. They had a possession, and Duke's the one that was able to cash in when Robertson stuck it.
Yeah, Robertson stuck the game winner with 46 seconds left in the first overtime. But let's back up a little bit to the end of regulation. There's a play where Owen Caputo passes it to Dyson Williams. He loses it. Williams scoops it up and scores with 44 seconds left, 6 seconds left on the shot clock, but Duke called time out there. They set up a play. Brendan O'Neill hits a pipe with about 10 seconds left, rolls out of bounds, and Carolina picks it up. We go to overtime.
Yeah, this was, Mark, to kind of echo your earlier comment, a coach texted me during the game, another Division I coach, and said, this feels like an MLO game in terms of the sloppiness of that. But yeah, that was kind of those ground balls, you know, that sequence was very telling of a lot of this game. You know, that was like the key scrum of the game, but there were scrums all over the field, the entirety of the game. The fact that, like, you know, Dyson Williams took that shot, I think is also kind of telling, because if you look down the score sheet for this, look how many different Duke Blue Devils had a bunch of shots. It's a lot of them. And it's not just Michael Sowers. It's not just Brendan O'Neill, even though those guys, you know, O'Neill got his shot you're talking about. You know, there's a lot of different guys who were able to kind of get their chances for the Blue Devils. Colin Krieg played a great game, particularly late, like you said, Mark. But, you know, that scrum was kind of like that was the game in a nutshell in a lot of different ways where, like, it was scrappy and you were going to fight for it. And with it being a timeout, I kind of made this comment on our Inside the Cross Slack of, like, you know, because a few plays earlier, Coach Bresci made that great timeout call to save the possession off the faceoff. And I said, it can come down to a timeout being the key play of the game, because in a lot of ways, it kind of felt like a coach's game more than a player's game. I don't know if that makes sense, but, you know, the way that the matchups were kind of, it was driven in terms of what UNC's defense was doing against Duke's offense. You know, so it kind of was telling to me that, you know, a coach stepped in where a player was going to make a play there. That's kind of how the game felt the entire time, more of a chess match than, you know, a shootout.
And listen, you know, I've been there, albeit at a much lower level, coaching my kids and their friends in club games in the past, where a play like that, short time, you have a timeout, you know, unsettled, tattered play, whatever the case may be, and you call timeout, and then 2 seconds later, a kid hits a shot and scores, and you're like, you know. I found that timeout compelling because, obviously, I don't know if you want to call it a 50-50 ground ball. I mean, it was just a bunch of guys swinging and trying to rake it out. I mean, the ball was on the ground in that scrum, it seemed, for about 6-7 seconds. And then the ball pops out. You know, Donowski's there. Like, if we get it, timeout, if we get it, timeout, if we get it, timeout. The referee's looking for that. But there was only 6 seconds left in the shot clock. So at that point, it's almost like just launch, just play it out. And, you know, if Carolina picks it up, you're not getting that timeout. You're not getting it. And so even if Williams picks it up and does that quick shot, I do believe Duke was in position to back it up. Maybe they weren't, you know, because you're concentrating on the ball at that point as a viewer. But I did find it odd because, you know, when you take that timeout, the shot clock does not reset. You do not get extra time. Now you only have 6 seconds from a scenario where everything was helter-skelter and Carolina's, you know, all over, the, you know, they're in that one central location picking up the ball, and now they're settled and that kind of thing. So I did find that one interesting. But again, you know, the goaltending down the stretch I thought was terrific. And yeah, it was, I think you make great points, Matt, to what Coach Donowski had to say. Like, they had to grind it out. They had to grit this thing out. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't pretty, but it's a win. And I guess the voters in the IL media poll that elevated Duke back to number one, you know, before this contest look really smart right now.
Mark, if the question is, you know, was it a good time? Like, you know, I wouldn't have called the timeout in that situation, in the sense that, you know, when, and look at the game winning goal to that, but as was over, you know, there was times when they broke down, particularly when they were doing that switch between man and zone. You know, the game winning goal, they kind of did that switch and they missed a slide there. So like, you had North Carolina in a situation where they were going to have to regroup quickly. And I don't know, I think you have the advantage there. If you're Duke, take advantage of it, maybe score the game winning goal, which obviously Dyson Williams would have done in that situation.
Yeah. And you mentioned the game winner. I mean, you could see that inside roll coming from a mile away, just the space that the shorty that was guarding Robertson, and they had switched back into a zone, correct? I mean, they were in a zone. He just got too much cushion for that inside roll, and just way too, you know, with the spacing for Duke was terrific on that set, because they didn't allow that closeness, you know, and Duke has made a living off of that. Sowers in particular, their interior passing has been pretty darn good so far in 2021. I'll tell you another takeaway, and I know we're giving a lot of love to Duke, and this game could have gone either way. Justin Anderson for Carolina continues to be one of my most favorite players in the country. I mean, that goal that he scored late to tie the game was terrific. And but how about Brennan O'Neill? I mean, you know, it doesn't seem like he's a freshman. I mean, at this point, he feels like a, you know, we've been talking about him for so long, he feels like an Adam Charlambidis or a Logan Wisnowskis, you know. But, you know, he didn't hesitate, man. When he got that shorty toward the end of regulation, he's like, let's go. And falling down, he had some heat on that thing. And it, you know, ricocheted out the midfield. But I know, Dan, you were saying, you know, why doesn't Duke give him the green light more often? And, you know, maybe you want to throw that out there.
Yeah, his ability, his size, his speed, and I, you know, when you have a Michael Sowers probably taking the number one pole, it puts for almost every other team they're going to play an advantageous matchup for Brennan O'Neill. And I'd love to see him ISO a little bit more and try to get his a little bit. You saw it at the beginning of the second half when he scored his first two goals and his only two goals of the game, but he, you know, right out of halftime, got the ball on the right wing, came down to speed a shorty to score from the right wing. And then the next time he got the ball, scored again. I'm a big fan of that kid since the first time I saw him play. I'm not the only person who thinks this, that there's huge things ahead of, for this kid. But I think right now, this year on this Duke team, he can be a huge contributor, bigger than he even is right now. I think he can be like the guy for that team, and he just needs to take his chances and have the confidence to do it.
You know, one of the things that I would, you know, Will Bowen was on him for most of this game, and I think he did a remarkable job playing him, and his ability to, you know, give O'Neill space off ball so he can help, but still be in position when O'Neill gets the ball. was incredibly valuable for the North Carolina defense tonight, which I thought, you know, despite that last goal and, you know, they definitely had a breakdown there that led to Duke's game winning goal. I thought North Carolina's defensive game plan and, you know, for the most part, the execution, except for a handful of plays, which, you know, in an ACC game, the number one versus number two team in the country, it's going to be a handful of plays that decide the game. You know, I thought their defense was really good. So with O'Neal, you know, I think he took the spots that were given to him, but he has arguably the best defender in the country on him. You know, it's not easy. You know, he definitely, like, when he gets the ball and ahead of steam, though, you know, you can be the greatest defenseman there ever was, and you're not going to stop that kid. So when he had that one that you're talking about where, you know, he got the ball and there, he had some daylight in front of him and he got, you know, that big body of his going downhill, that is a scary sight. But I really thought that Bowen just did a really good job on that matchup today.
Yeah, that's shorty in that situation. That could have been Peter Dirth or a healthy Ryan Tarenfenko, and O'Neal is still going to, you know, Danny Logan, you know, and O'Neal's still going to have the advantage right there. A couple things that just popped into my head. So what I appreciate about this game was it was the first Thursday night game where there wasn't the potential for a blowout, meaning Carolina had that huge run against Virginia, and then Duke made that huge run against Syracuse last week. This game was fairly contested all night long. It was a good back and forth. It kept people engaged. You know, folks tend to zone out or tune out when you see those big games. But you know, how about Carolina? You know, Carolina, I thought, really played gritty. I thought they played tough. Chris Gray, I don't disagree when I hear that the Tuorton is kind of boiled down to potentially three people right now: Michael Sowers, Chris Gray, and Jared Bernhardt. I guess I was waiting for Chris Gray to put that Superman cape on and win that game for Carolina. And it seemed like, I don't want to say that he struggled, but he was off a little bit in that role late in the game.
Well, let's talk about that. There was a point in overtime. Naso wins a faceoff in overtime. Duke calls timeout. Krieg makes two great saves on a Caputo shot and an O'Neal shot. And then they come down. Carolina gets the ball. Adler had a nice save on William Perry with about 2 minutes left. And Chris Gray, as Adler's coming behind the cage, he's riding him. He strips it from him and has a shot on goal with Adler. No offense to the kid, but floundering in the cage, slipped and was on it, and great wide right on the cage, just missed the cage in a crucial shot there. And I'm sure he wishes he had that shot back.
I spoke to Mike Adler after the game via Zoom. You know, quote, my flash before my eyes at play. You know, he made the save on Perry. He said that, you know, the ball got, you know, the trajectory of the ball kind of shifted a little bit. So, you know, he said he didn't have to work that hard. He was kind of being humble there. But he didn't think Perry got his best shot that he could off there. You know, he ends up with the ball behind the net, dropped the ball. It was kind of where a lot of that confusion came in. You know, Gray dislodged the ball. Adler still thought he had it. So he had a few steps there where he was kind of just acting as if, you know, business isn't get the ball out. Ended up back in the net and just slipped and did the desperation, you know, put my hand up and hope that I catch it. He compared it a little bit to being a surf, riding the wave. And he's an interesting cat, that Mike Adler. But, you know, yeah, like, I definitely think that that's the moment that Chris Gray, if you're a Tuorton winner, you know, that's kind of your moment, right? You know, it wasn't easy. And I definitely think that Duke obstructed him. You know, I don't remember who was kind of in sight of Gray. I do think that he was a little bit obstructed in that shot, but that's kind of a Tuorton moment, so to speak. Overtime against the number one team in the country, those are the moments you got to have.
Another thing that jumped out at me for this game was the number of penalties. Each team had 10 penalties in a game this high level. You typically don't see that. And I tell you what, in overtime, there were a couple that I'm like, you know, based on what happened in regulation, I thought the laundry was going to come out. They let them play. But I didn't know if you guys, from a viewership standpoint, I thought the game was well officiated. Don't get me wrong, but to have 10 fouls in that game with the number one and two team in the country, that's on the high end.
Everything felt contested. I think that's going to lead to penalties. It's not always clean when that happens. And when that happens, like, you know, I got to point out a few guys, because I thought North Carolina was in the middle of the field and bet a lot of the grittier, hard-nosed plays for much of this game. You know, as much as we're talking about Duke kind of having a gritty win, because they ultimately did come finish it off, Connor Mayer was just, I thought, getting every ground ball there possibly could be. He was just really physical. The face-offs, you know, I know that Duke ultimately won that battle, but North Carolina, I want to say they got three goals as a result of the face-off. You know, whether it was Tucci scoring that one or just kind of play, you know, right off of the draw there. This was really physical. And I thought for at least half of this game, North Carolina was the aggressor and Duke was kind of on the receiving end of a lot of that.
I don't disagree. I think that is, I think you're good with that. You know, it's funny when I've gotten into the habit when I'm watching the game at home, especially when I'm watching it with my kids, I'm not as dialed in dissecting. I need to watch that game back to pick up on some of the stuff that you're mentioning, Matt. But look, man, Carolina, you know, the baby blue, the Carolina blue used to kind of signify a certain lack of toughness. And I don't think that's been the case the last few years. And I don't think that's the case for this 2021 version. Again, it was a good game. You know, it was a good game. Had its peaks, had its valleys, but you know, in the end, when you get that overtime winner and you know, a guy like Joe Robertson scoring it, you know, what he's been through, what he's come back from, really, really good stuff.
Can I bring up one thing that I don't think we've touched on it? We've danced around it and talked about it a little bit, but the Cam Macri on Michael Sauer shutoff, that was a really interesting plan. It was one that, you know, Coach Donowski said that they kind of expected it. So it was one thing that they were, you know, able to deal with. But what I found really interesting was Michael Sauer's ability to set picks throughout the game, you know, seemed like a really key reason why Robertson was able to have the game that he did. And Robertson, the game, you know, who scored four goals, three assists, game-winning goal in overtime, he said Michael Sauer's is shut off, but was still the most impactful player on the field in that game. So I think that's extremely high praise for what Michael Sauers can do.
Well, I think that's a testament to the kind of player Michael Sauers is, because I think we've seen at this level, players who get shut off disappear. You know, they become ghosts. And, you know, and Sauers is a guy who in this Duke offense, 70, 75% of the time, the ball's in his stick as the creator, as the initiator, as the quarterback. So when he wasn't getting his volume of touches, he still contributed in a really positive, very much positive leadership.
A really fun game to watch, Dix, and also even more fun recapping it with our old friend, Matt Kinnear, here.
I haven't seen him in a bit myself. The beard threw me off initially.
I knew it was him by the Pearl Jam posters in his Zoom background.
Yeah, and his Capital sweatshirt.
Yeah.
The beard is throwing people off, especially because, like, you know, I've had it for a year now, you know, since the season shut down last year, I started growing a beard. Actually my wife loves it, so I kept it. And then, you know, I hadn't seen anyone in terms of lacrosse until, you know, to it this season. And, you know, I've had this beard for a year now, so it's second nature to me. So I was actually on a call after the UMass Albany game, you know, interviewing Scott Marr, and he stops in the middle of the Zoom when I pop up on the screen and says, "Matt, do you have a beard? What is that?" So it's taken people by surprise for sure.
You got to get out into more Zooms. Apparently, no one's seen you. It's crazy. Where you been hiding? All right, Matt Kinnear, thank you so much for joining us. Dixie, let's get to midweek games. There was one result from midweek game that I want to get your thoughts on, really only one significant game at all. UMass beat Hofstra on Tuesday 16-10 in a pivotal CAA game.
Yeah, very much so. When you talk about the CAA, UMass was the preseason favorite. Well documented that their season was delayed by a month. And then they dropped the game to Albany. And a little bit of the luster was off of the Minutemen. Hofstra's a team on the rise. Seems like week in and week out, Ryan Tierney is a human highlight film. I mean, just
he's a pro player.
Incredible release, that left hand. But you know, the pride. I always want to call him the Dutchman. Remember from back in the day, the Scatter Report, Neil Grauer would draw the big Dutch ship on the cover of our Scatter Report whenever we would play Hofstra. But the pride is more than just Ryan Tierney. But this is a big win for UMass. Really the first big battle within the conference. I know we had Delaware Towson a couple weeks ago, and Towson led that game pretty much all the way until the last few minutes of the game, and Delaware was able to come back and secure the come-from-behind victory at home. But really, this was the first big CAA in-conference game, in my opinion. You know, Delaware's ranked up in that, what, around 12, 13. Hofstra's right behind them around 14, 15. UMass down in the bottom part of the top 20. So this was the first, I think, top 20 matchup of the CAA. Goes to the Minutemen and gives them another shot in the arm as they continue to build after being so far behind the rest of the country in terms of getting after it in 2021.
All right, Dick, it's time for news of the week.
that was a little much.
It's late on Thursday.
It is.
So first is a news item. The MAC conference expanded its championship field and will include a few more teams due to COVID-19. You know, some teams haven't been able to play a lot of games, so they've kind of changed some of the rules to include more teams. I'm all for this in 2021. And if it affects other teams and other leagues, I think that every conference should look at how they do their tournaments and how they're going to give out their auto berth this year. So I'm in favor of this. Your thoughts?
I'm with you. I think it's a great move. The MAC is a really entertaining conference. When you look at Canisius, Marist, Detroit Mercy, I'll never forget the Detroit Mercy Notre Dame first round NCAA game I called years ago in South Bend. The Titans were leading for three quarters in that game, and they were just having a great time on the sideline, playing the air guitar, jumping around, just full of energy, full of excitement. And Notre Dame came back and won that game. So the MAC has never won an NCAA tournament game officially. I think they've won that, what's become that play-in game in essence. But I'm all for expansion, especially in this COVID year. We're seeing the Big Ten for the first time, all six teams make that tournament. The ACC, though, not having a tournament, which so they're going to pull up a little bit and where, you know, the Big Ten, the MAC, obviously, you know, probably whoever wins the MAC is going to get the AQ, and that's going to be that. But in a conference where there's multiple bids potentially at stake, the ACC not having a tournament doesn't give an extra opportunity to secure a big win or for someone to have their hopes damaged in the NCAA tournament. Whereas the Big Ten, I believe Patriot League is having a tournament. That's another stacked league with very much like teams. CAA, I believe, is going to have a tournament postseasons, and that's just to name a few. So especially in a year where the Ivies aren't playing, and that traditionally has been at least two, sometimes three bids. There's some extra bids that are going to be floating out there at large, and let's see who can grab them.
Dixon, similar postseason news. This week, our own Terry Foy did an interview with Tim Leonard, the athletic director of Towson University and the chair of the NCAA lacrosse committee. And I don't know what I learned from this interview. Did you get a chance to listen to this?
I did and I didn't. I started listening to the beginning. And then Terry, by the time it got kind of to the middle, I wasn't tracking. And I don't know if that was because of my limited capacity or if it just wasn't making a whole lot of sense.
Well, there wasn't a lot of answers.
There wasn't a lot of meat on the bone.
I have had more questions than answers after listening to the interview Terry did, with a great interview on the podcast, as well as an article that Terry wrote up. And more or less what I got out of it is the NCAA doesn't know where the first round of games are going to be. And there's a lot of issues. I'm not totally blaming the NCAA, but you know, they need to get on this stuff pretty quickly. where the games are going to be, because there's testing protocols and testing services and a lot of other questions that need to be answered prior to this happening 6 weeks from now, when the first round of the tournament will be. And they don't even know how many teams are going to be in the tournament, whether it'll be a play-in game or a 16-team field, whether they'll see that straight through, whether it'll be in one place or multiple places. And then there was the other issue of, because some teams aren't playing out of conference schedules this year, they're going to have to rely on something called the eye test. So there's no RPI or common metric that can join all of the teams together, and that it'll really have to be a very
subjective
review of the teams, which we think probably happens every year, even though they say it's very objective. So there's a lot to be decided. And so I think the bottom line for lacrosse fans is stay tuned.
Yeah, and I think that the eye test portion, it's difficult. I think a lot of people are saying, in particular this year, because of all the issues that you just mentioned, all the metrics that you just mentioned, the eye test could be more important this year than it ever has been. Let's take Vermont, okay? Ranked 13th in the latest IL media poll. Good lacrosse team, right? Beat Albany. They're 4-2. But a lot of people are like, oh, Vermont's really good. They only lost to Syracuse by 4 goals. High Point, you know, playing the gauntlet of the ACC, and they were down big to North Carolina, came back and made it a competitive game. But then in subsequent matchups, got blown out by Carolina, got blown out by Duke. Oh, High Point is a top 20 team because they only lost to Carolina by this. Well, they go out and play Richmond this past weekend, and the Spiders, that game was over in the first quarter. That's how well Richmond played against High Point. So those can be dangerous suppositions to make, especially when you have the Patriot, for the most part, is playing conference only. Now they do have some out of conference games. Loyola, for instance, played Towson, and they will play Georgetown. They played Virginia, but the Big Ten is playing conference only, and they're beating the heck out of each other. So you've got Maryland who clearly has established themselves. Rutgers is the next tier, but then folks are like, well, I only see the Big Ten being maybe a two-bid conference. Does that mean that an Ohio State or a Penn State can't beat a Vermont, Albany, can't beat Delaware, Towson, can't beat, you know, you get where I'm going with this, you know? So it's really, really difficult this year to make those evaluations because people are playing such like competition and they're not getting outside of that conference, you know, that out of conference as much as you would have. You know, Denver took on Duke, lost a close game, and then got destroyed by North Carolina. Are you going to eye test them, you know, based on that out of conference body of work, or are you going to look at what they've done recently? Most impressively, really dominating Georgetown at home, 13-7. They're in conference, yeah, for the rest of the season. So at least I'd have to look at Denver's schedule. Actually, admittedly, I'm not sure if they do have any more out of conference games. So that's the tough part of all of this. As much credence as you want to give the positive performances of teams like a Vermont and a High Point. Again, I'm not looking to pick on those teams. Those are just some teams that have bubbled up because they played against really, really good top five competition and fared well. But on the, by the same token, around that same time period, Denver got destroyed by North Carolina. And we know Denver is an NCAA tournament team. They could possibly be in championship weekend as this thing unfolds. So that's what I mean by the eye test, is it could be a dangerous proposition.
Yeah, as I mentioned before, I think that there's a lot still to be decided, and fans and listeners should stay tuned. Dix, finally, in probably the biggest piece of news from the week, Dahoka Nanacoke, the Mercurial Star of the Great Danes, was dismissed from the UAlbany team this week. Former number one recruit, ranked by Inside Lacrosse back in 2017. Great rookie season, a really great player, had a lot of eligibility issues throughout his time in Albany, and his career has ended for the Great Danes, and that team will just move on.
Yeah, and I don't have all the particulars. I've heard dribs and drabs of what took place. I think the most reliable piece of information I saw was from Chris Yastrzemski, who's an ESPN employee and a really good guy, as a matter of fact. And he just stated that, I guess, during the Albany-Stony Brook game last weekend, Nanacoke was yelling at his teammates, yelling at his coaches, and not acting in a fashion that was positive for the team. And that was, quote unquote, the last straw as to what, you know, that's the only public thing that I've seen. I've heard a lot of private things as well, but it's time to move on for Albany. I think Nanacoke, some of it to his fault, became a distraction. Some of it not his fault. For instance, I saw a highlight from that Stony Brook game last week where it was, I forget it was on Twitter or Instagram, but it's like, amazing play by Nanacoke. Look at this, blah, blah. He came down on a break. Instead of shooting the ball overhand, he tried to put the ball between his legs. And I'm like, there's so many problems with the clip. One, make the right play. He did get fouled, so he drew a penalty because a guy came and just crushed him. Two, they lost that game. And they lost big to Stony Brook. Like, why are we celebrating this almost goal? And that's where it's not his fault, you know, in terms of the perpetuation of some of the creative things he did. But it is time to move on from DeHogan Nanacoke. I know everybody in the lacrosse world, myself included, wishes him the best. But that's a heck of a program that Scott Morris built, and it runs. It's got a lot more talent in the cupboard than just DeHogan Nanacoke, and it could be addition by subtraction.
Yeah, his college career certainly seems like it's over, but I'm sure we'll see him in the pro game or on the world stage in the future. And we wish the best to him. Okay, Dix, it's time to preview the games of the week coming up. There is an incredible slate of games on Saturday. Dix,
it's a smorgasbord.
Five matchups featuring top 20 opponents. This is what I'm talking about. This is what we've been waiting for.
This is what you're talking about. This is it.
This is what we live for. This is what we live for, including two big ones in the Patriot League that we'll get to. So let's start. Noon faceoff. Number 9, Notre Dame, 4-1 overall, 0-1 in the ACC. We'll travel to the Dome to face number 4, Syracuse, who is 4-2, 1-1 overall in a monster game.
So both these teams coming off of tough one-goal losses, Notre Dame to Virginia, Syracuse to Duke. Syracuse an extra couple days of practice, couple days of rest as they played Thursday a week ago from this week. In the Dome, this is a great game on tap. It really is. You know, last week when we talked, I was really impressed by Virginia. I know we're talking Syracuse, Notre Dame, but I said I thought that Virginia Notre Dame game was much bigger for the Cavaliers than it was for the Irish. And they came out with a lot of passion. They fouled and Notre Dame was able to get back into the game via extra man. I think they were 3 out of 4 in the second quarter there that got them back in the game. But, you know, I had said, if that game stays in single digits, if that's a 9-8, 10-9 game, Notre Dame's going to win. If it goes 12-11, 13-12, then the Cavaliers had a better chance of winning, and it had a 12-11. So
you called it.
Look at me.
You called it.
Yeah, just call me.
Kreskin.
But no, look, it's just same thing applies this week. Notre Dame, really, really good defense. Entman struggled on Saturday. He did not have a great game against Virginia. He did give up. I can't remember the exact stat line, but he had single digit saves while giving up 12 goals, and typically doesn't happen with him. So again, can Notre Dame score enough? They can get stops, but can they score enough? They seem to be lacking a player. You know, Pat Cavanaugh is an excellent distributor. We saw Will York, tremendous off ball.
They need Dodgers.
Do they have the Dodgers?
Yes. Guys who
Do they have guys that can initiate the offense, get the defense rotating, get people thinking, looking? needing to focus on someone other than just their man?
That's my big question. I like this analysis, Dick. So you're saying, again, a single-digit game, Notre Dame wins. They can dirty it up and keep it low scoring. If it gets into the, like, above double digits, you might favor Syracuse.
Yeah, and it's not rocket science. Yeah. But
I'm with you.
The lower scoring game, the better chance the Irish have to win.
Next game of the day. This is a doozy in the Patriot League. Number 7, Army. 4-1, 2-0 in the Patriot League. Coming off of a little bit of a COVID break. We'll travel to Lehigh to face the number 10 Mountain Hawks, who are 4-0, 3-0 on a roll at 1 p.m.
So Army got back into the swing of things. Nice win over Holy Cross last weekend, 13-3. That was our first game since March 6th. So
Jesus.
They had a quite a bit of a layoff. When we talked to Kevin Cassis last week, that, you know, the Army, they were supposed to play Lehigh. So this game is a reschedule from that original date. And this will be a terrific game. It really will be a fun game. Both very physical teams. Face-offs, man. Holy smokes. I mean, Army has not faced off well for a few years, and that trend continues. And we've seen what Lehigh can do. We saw what they did to Loyola when they can control the ball, milk the clock, be opportunistic on offense. But let me tell you, I mean, Army, they've got a very special player. They got a lot of really talented players. But Brendan Nichtern, 31 points so far on the year in what, 5 games? In Army's 4-1, 5 games. So he's averaging just over 6 points a game. He's special, really, really good player. But will he have the ball on his stick enough to make a difference in this game? That's the big question I have in this one.
Let's stay in the Patriot League. Number 18, Loyola, took a tough loss last week. 4-3, 2-1 in the Patriot League. They will go down to Annapolis to face the number 14 Navy midshipmen, who are 3-0 and undefeated also in the Patriot League, 1-0 at 2 p.m.
I mean, you want to talk about a team that had a tremendous layoff. It was 4 weeks between games for the midshipmen. They came out sluggish against Bucknell, turned it on, won that game 13-10. Look, they're facing a Loyola team that's incredibly hungry after losing an overtime game to Towson last week, where Kevin Lindley was held to double donuts. You don't see that every day. 0 points, 0 assists. I think they had in that game 7 or 8 shot clock violations against the Tigers. They just never seemed to get into a rhythm. So Navy's MO, though, in all 3 of their games, the Jacksonville game, the Bucknell game, they got off the slow starts. And then they have these spurts where they just really turn it on. And there's no superstar on Navy's roster. There's really no superstars on Loyola's roster, but it's kind of known that if you can stop Olmstead, you can stop Lindley. You got a pretty darn good chance of winning. That's what Towson did, shutting down Lindley last week. So, again, I expect a really physical game. This game is at Navy. This will be their 4th straight home game, which is great when you have such a young team like Joe Amplo does. But this will be a knockdown, drag-em-out fight in the Patriot against, you know, look, a team that's only had 3 games, and then you got a team that's got 7 under their belt, but they're itching to get back out there and make an impression.
Moving on to the Big Ten, number 16, Ohio State. It's 3-3 overall. Of course, they're also 3-3 in the Big Ten. We'll take on Rutgers, number 8. Coming off a loss to Maryland, they're 4-2 overall. That game is at 5 o'clock on Saturday.
Syracuse, Notre Dame, Saturday is televised. That is 12 noon. And I don't know if it's ACC Network or if it's ESPNU, but it's one of them. So please watch. And then Joe B and I back together for Ohio State at Rutgers before you, stash the Easter eggs and put your Cadbury bunny in your Easter basket there, Amy Flynn, for your husband, Dan. Tune in on BTN for Joe and I. I'm really excited for this game. When I look at Rutgers, again, another loss to Maryland this past weekend, 13-9. It was a game they came out of the gates really hot, scored a lead, and then just, you know, Maryland does what they do. They just wear you down. They win possessions. Jared Bernhardt is Jared Bernhardt. The ball's moving, and you know, and they're facing an Ohio State team that I just feel like they're getting better and better every week. And they've got two wins over Michigan in the last 3 weeks that most of the lacrosse world will say, yeah, it's Michigan, you know, and Ohio State should beat them. Nick Myers and the Buckeyes lost in 2019 to Michigan. And Nick Myers and his players never call Michigan, Michigan. It's always that team up north. It doesn't matter what. That's the amount of dislike and the rivalry and all that good stuff. So to get those two wins over Michigan, that has really re-energized this team. They got blown away by Rutgers first meeting 22-12. And Ohio State makes no excuses about that one. They say they kicked our butts. They're an entirely different team from that game. They've never won in Piscataway. They've never won since – they've never beaten Rutgers at Rutgers since the Big Ten formed in 2015. So can they break that streak this week against a Rutgers team? I think that, you know, when I look at these guys, they're so talented and so explosive, but I'm just worried about – I worry about Rutgers. They rely really heavily offensively on five guys for the most part. And we're getting to the stage of the season where you're at that mid-level, right? And that midpoint, and you're nicked up, and you're you know, and I'm just really curious to see if Rutgers can get a little bit more depth of scoring to support their superstars.
Yeah, this game is really for second place in the Big Ten.
It is.
And the inside track for maybe an NCAA at-large berth. So this is a huge game, and I look forward to hearing you and Joe B on the call.
Oh, I look forward to you hearing me and being heard. No, and this look, for 1-2, they get a bye into the semifinals. So, you know, the quarterfinals, 3-6, 4-5, mentioned all six teams make it this year. So you get a week of rest if you can secure one of those top two seeds.
And the way things are looking in the Big Ten, you don't want to be the fourth seed, where you may have to play Maryland. You'd rather take your chances as, you know, a 2 or 3 or seed and skip Maryland in the semifinals.
Stay out of the path of the Terrapins.
So, yeah, this is a big game for Ohio State and Rutgers in the Big Ten. Dix, our last game of the weekend that I want to highlight is another top 20 matchup, and it's a non-conference matchup, but we stay in the state of Virginia for this one. Number 17, Richmond, is 4-3 overall. Travel to Charlottesville, take on the number 6 Virginia Cavaliers, 7-2 overall. That game is also at 5:00 on Saturday evening.
You want to know, you know, you want to talk about a team that has really improved. Look no further than the Richmond Spiders. This is a team that has gotten exponentially better since the season began. So you just look at their early season competition and scoring in single-digit goals, you know, 8-7 loss to Loyola, 14-9 to Carolina. We knew that this team was going to be good defensively, you know, with guys like Sean Menges just really disrupting things. But then they come from behind to beat Towson, 11-10, lose then to Duke, 13-6. No real shame in that, right? But then they then do what they should do. VMI, 23-6 win. Bellarmine, 17-5 win. And then we got the big battle with High Point. And watching the game, when I turned the game on late, I think I turned it on maybe beginning of the second quarter, and it was over. I mean, Richmond just jumped all over High Point. The one thing that I failed to mention in our analysis last week was Richmond has a great defense, and High Point is still working things out. You know, High Point can score with the best of them, but if you can't stop teams, then it's going to be a long day, and that's what Richmond made it for the Panthers. So, Virginia, they got their swagger back. Huge, huge road win against Notre Dame last week. I thought Alex Rode was terrific. The defense played much better collectively, and Dox Akin. How about Dox Akin coming back in a big way? Really, his first big game performance in 21 for sure. And maybe, you know, since the championship run back in 2019. So, you know, these are two teams that are coming into this game with a lot of positives.
That'll be a great one. Again, a full slate of fantastic top 20 matchups on Saturday. And outside of the top 20, there's great conference matchups throughout the lacrosse world. Find your favorite team, find the listing, whether it's streaming or on broadcast TV, and make sure you are in front of a screen to see it. Dex, it's time for the give and go. And we're going to bring Matt Kinnear back in, our good friend, for a guest appearance of the give and go. We don't usually do this, Matt Kinnear. You are a true friend of the pod here.
I'm assuming that it's going to be best albums of the year 1994, right? Maybe our give and go question.
Even if a Bon Jovi or a Springsteen record didn't come out that year, that's what Flynn's picking.
So I have to, a little guilty admission here. I was thinking of you earlier today, Matt. I was out and about exercising and
walking in the woods.
I had this Dave Matthews song in my head. So I was like, hey, Siri, play a Dave Matthews Essentials playlist. And I loved it. Absolutely loved
Dave
it.
Dave Matthews Band Essentials now playing.
You hear that? There you go. That really works. If you couldn't hear that, I said that and my phone has started playing like a Dave Matthews Essential. Siri heard that. And I was like, oh man, it made me think of Matt Kinnear because, you know, Matt's a really good guitar player, Dix. Mm-hmm. And he learned, he's of that age where Dave Matthews was like the thing to learn how to play, and he can play a lot of Dave's songs. So anyway,
nice.
Here's our give and go for the week. Ready? So Easter is this weekend, and it got me thinking like the Easter Bunny. And then I got started thinking about some of the other holiday mascots. And I started thinking of like
the Easter Bunny is a mascot.
Yeah. Santa Claus, Rudolph, okay. Frosty, you know, St. Patrick's Day has a leprechaun, Valentine's Day. Has
Give it up for your elegant city Santas.
The Cupid for Valentine's Day, Thanksgiving has
I got you. Okay.
The turkey, you know, jack-o'-lantern for, you know, whatever like imagery or iconic things.
Michael Myers,
holidays. For each of these holidays. And then I was like, what are the best mascots in Division I college lacrosse? And when I think about best mascots, I think like unique, interesting, but also like, if you personally had to put on that costume for like a game and go out there on the sidelines, which ones would you want to represent? Like, who would you want to be? And I kind of break it into two different ones. There's the live mascots. Like, you know, there's a goat for Navy as a goat. Handsome Dan is awesome for Yale. Notre Dame has like the leopard, a dude who dresses up like a leprechaun. And then there's like the costumey ones, like Hopkins is a blue jay. Maryland has some student who dresses as a student or whatever. So what are your favorite mascots in Division I college lacrosse? Who would like to start?
Guest has the floor.
All right. It's all yours, Kinnear.
All right. Since you mentioned Easter as the lead-in, and since I'm a Catholic school product and a product of a high school with the same mascot, the Providence Friars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got to go religious. You know, you got God on your side. You're always going to be at least a little bit better.
Do they do a real guy with like the ball, like the head, the friar cut, or do they have a friar mascot? You know what? They have a suit, or is it like a person?
I believe they have a suit, but I think what they should do is like, you know, when you're a freshman, you know, they pick a guy who's going to be the friar, shave the head with that like U-shaped hair thing.
Doesn't going. Albany do that to like one freshman every year for their team pictures?
Yeah, they had like one this year. Like they one had the friar cut.
Yeah.
I think it was Stephen Ramirez awesome. who was the friar in their in their photos. But yeah, nice. you get your belt with the three what are they called? The cords? Are that what they called for their oaths? I'm trying to remember my Archbishop Curley education of the friars there.
GCD, the easiest cords to play.
Cord with no H.
Okay.
Yeah, the rope belt that they get. Okay. So, and I mean, it's also the most comfortable. You get to wear like basically like a piece of fabric and like a rope belt. Not a bad way when it gets, 75, 80 degrees in May.
Okay. All right. What else you got? The Friar, number one.
We can ping pong this if you want. You know,
Let's ping pong.
Opportunity to think of a little bit more. And so by the way, what do you need? What do you need?
No, I was just saying along those lines. One of the ones I wrote down is the Jasper, the Manhattan Jasper, named after one of the original priests at University of Manhattan or something. They have a friar type Jasper mascot, and I think that's a cool name.
I did a story in Manhattan this weekend. I was wondering what a Jasper was, so thank you.
There you go. So my son Matt, playing soccer for Loyola, going down to Curly, I can attest that there still are friars at Curly. They still wear that what do you call it? I mean, is it a smock? Is it a robe? But they don't have the hair. They do not. They have, you know, they don't have the friar cut.
That's only halfway in, man. You got to go all in. You got to get the friar.
You know, times have changed. Times have changed. Mascot. You know what? I like the Georgetown Hoyas. I like the Hoya mascot. And you know, so when you talk about like the drawing, like when you see that bulldog, I mean, right now you think Gonzaga, you know, just because of they're in the Final Four. But really it's either the blue G or it's the bulldog with the studded collar. And if I had to dress up in that getup, I wouldn't mind dressing up like the Hoya.
You like the studded collar. That's your look.
You're the one walking in the woods, not me.
You know what that means.
Oh, yes, you do. You probably have to cut that out.
No. We'll keep that. It's late at night. All right, Dix. You got another one or you want to kick it back to Kinnear?
The Hopkins Blue Jay, the cartoon Blue Jay from Neil Grauer, Nag, shout out Nag. I mean, that to me will always be the iconic mascot. I would not want to get into that costume, however, that Blue Jay is creepy looking. I'm trying to think. I mean, Otto the Orange is always kind of fun.
Is Otto the Orange and Brutus the Buckeye,
yeah.
The same suit? Just with like different colors.
Otto's a big, full round thing. Yeah, it's like a round orange, basically. Oh, Brutus is just the head. The Buckeye is just the big Buckeye head, and then the body. Okay. Yeah, Brutus the Buckeye. That's a good one too.
Brutus. It's the most iconic. Like, you know, if you're Brutus at Ohio State, that's pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
I mean, do they get like 100 kids try out to be Brutus or something like that?
Probably. There's like 100,000+ people at the game.
Yeah, that's true. Law of averages.
They have their own songs and, you know, Hang On Sloopy, OHIO. Brutus is cool. I'm down with Brutus.
And let's keep on the theme of the dogs. I know UMBC, the Retrievers.
Thumbs down.
Really?
I'm down on the I love dogs. But the Retriever's mascot, it's like, are you going to like BU Terriers too? Come on. Like, this is not part of this conversation.
Are these your choices or my choices?
Your choice is yours. It's who you choose to be.
Okay. I like the UMBC Retrievers.
Don't let it bother me.
I like the UMBC Retrievers. And I like Albany actually has a new logo, the Dane. So the ears are pointed up to shape a U. And then you have the Dane face. I think that's pretty cool as well.
Okay.
A problem with that one too? I mean, go ahead.
They used to have the Scooby-Doo logo.
How can you hate on a retriever? I mean, retrievers are like the most lovable dogs.
But it's not like the coolest mascot.
And, I mean, are we doing coolest or ones that you like?
Obviously, my like
just change the rules.
What I think is different news.
Let's go back. You've only said the Jaspers. All right. What are your favorite mascots?
I've told you the Leprechaun is cool. I think Handsome Dan is dynamite. I kind of like the Penn Quaker. How about that?
What does that one entail?
Like the oats?
Do I have a Penn Quaker mascot?
No, I don't. I'm looking at my bobblehead collection back here, and I think I have a Penn Quaker.
I mean, I know what a Quaker looks like. I'm asking, is there
it
a
looks
Quaker
like a, it's like a guy. Somebody try.
No, I know. I know what it looks kind of like, but I'm saying, does someone get into that costume?
It's a costume.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, actually, when I was working at Penn, I like bought a new suit like for our mascot and had to go. I know way too much about mascot suits. In fact, there's a guy in Philadelphia who does a lot of the mascots. Okay. And I know way too much about making mascot suits.
See, I like the mascots that like you can just like go to a thrift store and like kind of like get them together. So I'm going to go with like, how about the Hand Pirates? Like that's just one that you can get one of those like curved swords and an eye patch and you're good to go. All right. Like just kind of make a lot of noise on the sideline. You're the Hampton Pirate.
Drink a little rum.
Yeah. Cleveland State Viking. Get some.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Now on Destiny is all. Bring it.
Basically, I like the mascots that are like just one step removed from like a crazy weird fan. You know, like this is a guy that just had a little too much in the crowd and just became the mascot. That's kind of my approach here.
Well, isn't there a guy like that, that at the Minnesota Vikings game, he dresses up like the Viking and he's the super fan. And
every team, the Ravens have guys like that too. Yeah. You know, Captain Defense. And yeah, we got, we all got guys like that.
I know exactly who you're talking about too, man.
Yeah. He's the best. That guy's been like a star of commercials. And
Yeah. He's in an M&T Bank commercial.
Yeah.
Captain Defense.
All right. So do we have any kind of consensus here? I think
I'm going to throw one out there because I don't know what it is. What is the Highlander? NJIT Highlanders. What's the Highlander?
That was a movie. That was like a futuristic dude.
It's someone from Scotland. The Scots are the Highlanders. They come from the mountains of Scotland.
The Highlands. In Scotland?
Yeah, so you got to wear like a kilt and carry like a William Wallace. It's a Highlander.
I like it.
Always good. Yeah, I like that one too. That's not bad. And it's unusual. You know, how many Tigers are there in lacrosse? There's Towson, there's Princeton. Who else? So I'm throwing out those kind of like.
Division III level is RIT.
If you're a cat or a bird. Yeah, like there's a lot of those. Yeah. So I'm looking for something unique.
Yeah. I know I'm gonna catch flack for this, but I like the Loyola Greyhound. I think that's cool. No? Okay, that's fine.
The name of this podcast is gonna be like Dog Day Afternoon. Like or Walking like the Dog. Walking the Dog is gonna be the you have just come up with the title for this podcast. All dogs or underdogs. Boom.
What up, dog?
Did it, underdog. Man, Dixie.
Well, I think Brutus is the consensus.
I'll tell you what. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend. Share the love. It's free. I'd like to thank our special guest, IL Editor-in-Chief Matt Kinnear. Thanks for coming on late on a Thursday evening. We always love to hear from you. So give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse and I'm at simply D_FLY. Remember, stay positive and test negative. And as always, enjoy the games while you can.
Yeah. Okay. What is this? I'm a pro. What's the matter with you?